We're recording, my friend.
Awesome.
I'm Brian Breckenridge. There's another episode of the Breckening Podcast. I would be remiss if I didn't say that I've done that myself a little bit, but this is the way my voice sounds, so it only sounds as cool as that. My guest here today is Paragraph Taylor. Like, I'm going off what Facebook says.
Absolutely. No, Facebook. Facebook is the closest to the name that I best identify with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, legality and stuff. But first name used to be
Paragraph?
Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
And moved it to last name, and I prefer Paragraph. But, you know, perfect. Ricky Bobby probably prefers Shake and Bake. So, you know, two first names.
Okay. We'll just stick with Paragraph for the sake of sanity.
Awesome. What's that like?
It's mundane at best.
That's what I've heard. My favorite joke by the Joker character in the comics was, and still is, where is the safest place to hide?
Safe? I don't know.
In sanity.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
That's one you gotta read.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Because people were like, what took you so long to say the last three syllables? There's a space there.
It's hard to, it's like there's great lines in TV shows.
Yeah.
Because, and so many of them have like a good pause. Like Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
I blew myself. Yeah, or even in between sentences. Like, you say something, there's a pause, like the other character's like looking at them awkward or something like that. And this is a lot of across TV shows and movies. Yeah. And then they say a next line, and it's hilarious. In your day-to-day, it's hard to get that. You have to say something funny in like one line or like a phrase.
Yeah.
And then it's in the moment, it's time. That's fine, everything. But you're like some sweet fucking lines in media. It's because there's a break, and then they let it. The show 30 Rock. Jack Donaghy's talking about 30
Rock.
It's one of the later seasons. He's talking about Mitt Romney. He's like, and he has a drink in his hand. He's like, what's up with this? He's like, I don't even like Mitt Romney anyways. The guy doesn't drink. I mean, how does he let a moment land? And he says that, and he takes a drink, and that's letting it land. You can't let things land
these
in
days,
everyday conversation.
Not anymore. No, it started with Vine at the beginning of the 20-teens, and then TikTok took over that at the end of 20-teens, beginning of 2020s. What are we at for an average attention span in the United States now? Like
hour-long podcast.
7 seconds or hour-long podcast. There's no in-between anymore. Yeah.
That's why I just shoot for about an hour. All right. Well, speaking of the clock is ticking. Let's go back. Are you from Irving as well? Are you one of the Irving OG guys? Or
kind
of? I know Cameron is.
Yeah.
I know some of the Secret of Boris guys were or are.
Yes.
That's not the reason I want to have you on. I like it because
I
like you
origins
guys and I dig your music.
Origins are everything to me.
Yeah. Where does it start for old Paragraph?
So
where do the pages start turning?
I could lead up to Irving, that I moved to at the end of 1989, the very end of 1989. So born in 82, and the first like 7 or so years of life were spent moving back and forth between Houston, where I was born, and Los Angeles. And I just thought it was because, like, you know, we were like, there are different career prospects or whatever. I'd grown up forever thinking that. And then after about turning 30, mom confided in me. She's like, oh, yeah. No, that wasn't moving. That was me and your father kidnapping you from each other.
Oh.
We would get in a humongous fight. And then one of us, usually me, would take you, sneak out, get a red eye the next morning, go start a new life in either Houston or Los Angeles, whichever city we weren't in. And, you know, things would settle down, and then your father would come out and find us and make up, and then a domestic abuse thing would happen again, and then you'd start over. So Irving was the first locational permanence in my life ever. And it still ranked, or maybe, I don't know, still. There was just one study a couple years ago that said Irving was like the fourth most boring city in the United States, and I don't know why the number and the study stuck with me.
You know, that checks out, but I'm okay with that.
Well, it was, but now it's more exciting.
Yeah, with the complexes and Las Colinas. Yeah,
that and culture, because it wasn't too cultured until about the mid-aughts or so, and then like it has a lot of Mexican culture in the south part and a lot of Indian culture in the north part that really like embraced and started opening up a lot of like actual taqueros. I'm so white, not saying that right, in the south, and then a lot of like, you know, bazaars and Patel Brothers, favorite place to get snacks. SWAT is the best taste in town.
You'll hear people be like, oh, great Indian food in Irving.
Yeah, and you're like, what? But it's
also
Valley Ranch.
Also, it's Taqueria.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so far from it. Lavanderia.
No, those are, plenty of those in DFW, but Irving, like La Margarita is still one of my favorite places.
Right there like, by...
We grew up going to there. That's where I have fond memories of my dad, mom and dad getting fajitas.
Do you remember the Blockbuster Music that used to be right there?
Oh, yeah.
That was where
I bought my first Warped Tour tickets there.
Oh wow! And oh yeah, back when you bought them at record stores.
A shit ton of that summer as well. Epitaph Records had their CDs for sale for $10, which was a fucking steal back in, let's say, 2000, 2001.
Oh yeah,
that era.
Yeah.
And that's where I was getting into punk too, and bought my Warped Tour tickets there.
Yeah, dang.
But yeah, remember that or the Sears. Service desk.
Yeah,
like they would just, God for like Friday morning 9 a.m. there'd just be like a line of people just there to get the hot concert ticket coming through.
Mm-hmm. I was that person getting a ticket for Nine Inch Nails in a Perfect Circle on like May. I think it was like 23rd, 2000. I only remember the date specifically because it was the day that Perfect Circle's debut album, Mirror to Gnomes, came out. Yeah. And they're like, hey, our CD came out today, and we're some unknown. And Maynard's trying to downplay Tool and all that. And back when you bought tickets at the mall, man, back before the internet. Yeah, that's memories of Irving for me. And then I ended up meeting Cameron Taylor from also Secret of Boris.
Check out the previous episode or one of the previous episodes.
Yeah, on previous Leon. I don't know.
Previously on the Reckoning podcast.
I don't know.
And
if
this is where I'd insert a clip of him saying something.
Yeah.
Just listen to that and this episode. Keep listening to this episode. Anyways.
We met New Year's Eve 1998 because our mutual friend, he was a great friend throughout like the first 20-30 years of life for me, and then we kind of just drifted apart in adulthood and naturally, amicably. His name was John, and he introduced me to Cameron. He's like, hey, he's this guy that has a lot of similar music taste to you and a lot of ambition, but that's about all you have in common. I'm like, cool. So our first date was like getting to know each other before playing a bunch of like Deftones and Korn and Nine Inch Nails and Nirvana covers in John's living room that night, New Year's Eve 1998. Our first date was eating Wendy's. And it was like, now we're great. We can totally, shoot the breeze. But then it was probably the most awkward meal I've ever had. We were just like silent, and I'm just completely gothed out head to toe. And he looks like Limp Bizkit manager or roadie or member. Yeah. And like,
a lot of music in common, but that's kind of it.
Not really.
How your the pieces of your personality puzzle may or may not connect here and there.
Exactly. And they just Vesica Pisces. At the music, and we found out that night just playing around on other people's songs, and then I was in town visiting in my continuing back and forth between Texas and California, but this is more in the teenage years, not the childhood kidnapping. I actually stole my stepdad's truck and drove out to my real dad's in Long Beach because I was, I didn't know where I lied on either spectrum or what spectrums were back then, the autism and gender spectrum, but it was late 90s and I knew that I didn't belong and I didn't feel right here. And I was like, okay, let's go live with dad. And I was dealing with some home issues then, and that's how that ended up happening. So I moved out to Long Beach and flew here for a week. And John's like, you got to meet this guy, Cameron. And then here we go. And then we played and then that's it. And then I flew back to California and ended up moving back here about 6 months later, and John had a band with Cameron named Lame.
Okay.
And I was like,
predecessor of Secret of Boris.
Absolutely. Yeah. The predecessor, forefather, ancestor, probably direct.
An Irving staple band.
Big time.
There's some things about Irving that I love Irving, you know, just having grown up there. But it's like, if I can name, if I'm like, yeah, that's from Irving, baby.
Well, Robert Miguel, who's now, I think he does like internet radio in Uvalde, Texas, and he plays all Texas rock. He plays a lot of Secret of Boris. And a lot of other really great acts around here, like all levels, you know, Lockjaw, Drowning Pool, and then like newer
Robert
bands
Miguel
as well.
When the 97 won the Eagle,
correct.
Was I have my issues with the Eagle, but it was really cool at one point in time.
Yeah.
And then really towards the death nail, whatever, it started to really suck ass.
Right before it became Sunny 97.1.
Not even that. Just even like its realm of rock that it proclaimed to be about. Yeah. And then they gave some fan service like on a Sunday night. Oh, yeah. When everybody's huddled around the radio.
The local show.
Yeah. And that's when you actually heard something new that wasn't, you know,
that was Robert Miguel's
bullshit. That was just top 40, you know, barely rocked.
AC/DC, the Black Album by Metallica. That's about it.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. God forbid we play any 80s Metallica.
Yeah.
Like around 4 p.m. Because that'll rile up the...
People stuck in traffic.
Yeah. We'll be soon.
Thrash is exactly what they need.
And go, Megadeth. Click. You know, we're hanging up on that caller. Like, yeah. We're not going to play any Meg. There you go.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. But Robert Miguel from that Eagle.
He was one of the cool, really cool parts. I always liked him. You know, cool parts of the Eagle.
He's the Eagle, rest in peace. Thankfully, Robert's still kicking. Yeah. And Robert came to see our Nine Inch Nails tribute, Mr. Self-Destruct. In San Antonio a couple months ago, actually, and he's, you know, nice. He's doing great. But he said, from the gutters of Irving, Texas, anytime he introduced Lame at a show, and it really, really stuck. So, yeah, you're definitely right about them being a staple. I had, in 99, coming back then and seeing that band at its toddler, not infancy, but not quite childhood yet. It was developing, and everybody was... getting their chops together. So was I with, you know, my Nine Inch Nails influenced, just stacking a bunch of keyboards on top of each other till they sound as angry as a metal band. And our two bands kind of played together for a while. And then turn of the century, mine kind of dissipated out from under me. And then it was just back to me being by myself. But I got spoiled by having bandmates who could collaborate with and make everybody's ideas better. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I've missed that collaboration. And Cameron's like, I'm kind of at a dead spot with Lame. I feel like I've given it all I can give, because he was the principal writer at all. And he knew that I had like the sophomore album of my next release for that act ready to go without any lyrics, really. And he's like, oh, this is perfect. You're playing me these demos. I'm seeing stuff over it.
I have this English degree I'd like to use.
Right. Yeah, and that's what ended up becoming a lot of the one Lame release, which is on streaming everywhere. Nothing Ever Works. A lot of those songs, like Tolerance, was the name of a song from my band, but Cameron put like riffs together. Like, we're really good at filling each other's blanks. Anytime there's like a weak spot in like one song, the other one would be like, oh, this riff will go perfect here. Or what I ended up doing later on, like with Secret of Boris in Your Ghosts, What You Became, or more recently, Room 101, the single we put out, was it a couple
just
months
recently.
Now? Yeah, very recently.
The music video.
With all the hanging, they look more hazardous than they are, fluorescent lights. Yeah, I love that video and that song, especially now. It's one of my favorites. But those two songs, What You Became and Room 101, are great examples of me hearing a song that he has, and there's nothing wrong with it. It was just like... inspirationally like usual, or I don't want to use the term offensively, but boring to me. Inspirationally boring, like, oh, this sucks so much, I'm just gonna put some like crap on it to like make it worse, and it ends up making it like magic. Like What You Became, I was like, this is what you're trying to be like synth pop, and it's not working. Let me throw a slide guitar on there, that wouldn't work. And it like it made the song pop like what it was. And Room 101, I was like, oh, that's so like Neanderthal, like bang the wall, let me just go as far as I can with like the metal harmonic, like Iron Maiden, Morbid Angel kind of riffs over it, and then put this weird like psychedelic-y kind of bridge into it, and then boom, the magic. So that's where our chemistry comes into play, and it's continued to have been very
No, I've always been fascinated with that, with the musicians. Like, I'm like a peripheral type guy. You know, I have friends in bands and all that. I've maybe been in a room once or twice. I'm no musician. But the creative process, this is something.
It's certainly an artist.
It happens
with comedy.
In your homes when you're playing your instrument, and then also here when you're collaborating. So that shit's always been fascinating to me. How here's what this person presents, and it's like yours and Cameron's. You know how you complement each other.
Yeah, those personality juxtapositions really benefit the song. 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, and it's like, you could have everybody that agrees on, everything someone writes, so you all agree musically, and that's, that can be fine. Like, you hear, like, a lot of, like, when I got into, like, a lot of punk bands and, like, hardcore bands, even, like, metalcore bands, every type of music or genre, you can have fucking, like, a dozen bands that sound, you could not tell them apart.
Right.
Casual fans probably can't tell them apart. Now, if you love all these bands, you can.
Right,
but
people that think Seven Dust sounds like Korn because they've never listened to nu metal.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
right. Because we do, and we're like, no, they are very different bands. Yeah, but outside of it, I can see how they.
No, and that's one thing I love about music. For me personally, is bands that really have a unique take.
Yeah.
Especially in a genre. Now, nu metal, kind of does it. Again, Cameron and I went over this in our interview where nu metal, you have a bunch of like odd shit, plenty of shit, but plenty of great creative. It's so creative in how it is, as opposed to just like, hardcore, like the Hatebreed sounded type bands.
I think that's what made it new, is that like metal's formula had kind of been honed so well that people were like, why not put a turntable there? It's just the same kind of concept of why not put a slide guitar over a synth poppy song. It's like, it seems like it wouldn't fit so well. It does fit because it's new. And that's kind of maybe where that movement came from.
And it's like, it gives credit to the accessibility of metal, where, at first it was like, you could have like death metal. It looks like this. It sounds like this. Metal, thrash sounds like this. But it can be, and thanks to bands probably like Faith No More, to a degree. Like, they, to me, have never really sounded like a metal band just because they're really doing their own thing.
Right.
They're loud and maybe a little heavy, but to me, I never heard Faith No More and thought metal just because it's weird it is.
Nothing metal about
how weird it is. And, like, I do like me some weird shit.
Oh, yeah. Album of the Year is fantastic by Faith No More.
I've only owned Angel Dust, which was still pretty good, but I think I just never got into them at the right time. I bought Angel Death literally like 5 years ago.
Did you ever get into any of the Mike Patton offshoots at all?
Only the Dillinger Escape Plan EP.
What he did, Aphex Twin's Come to Daddy with them on that. That was so cool.
That Come to Daddy album, music video, scares the fuck out of me.
Just all the faces and then.
Yeah,
the...
I'm like, I don't need to watch this ever again. I'm good. that hits too deep.
Yeah. That's probably why I like them.
Right next to my, I don't understand this, my fear of E.T. The I don't know why that dude still freaks me out to this fucking day.
That's so funny. I think I have a particular comfort level with him because in my pre-physically and mentally cognitive years, I kind of looked like him. And the movie came out around the same time I came out of my mother, so there was a kind of a kinship with E.T. because I've always felt like alien, and until recent discoveries of my places on both spectrums, I always felt like completely out of place. I'm like, I could relate to that dude with the finger and the glowy thing, but
it was the gray dying E.T. part that really freaked me out. Yeah, so that made his entire color spectrum and all that really freaked me out. What's up, Cameron?
Speaking of,
guest Cameron Taylor just walked in.
Yeah,
as we're recording, he's being polite and not.
He's tipping toeing. Thanks.
What's up, y'all?
Hey,
what up, CZ Kazakh? Kazakh. See, he's not from Kazakhstan.
Does ET freak you out? The alien.
Who?
ET the alien.
I prefer Mac and Me.
Oh well, he's freaky in a weird way. But
Mac and
Me's
got
not as
gouch
freaky,
eyes.
Just goofy looking. Yeah.
He's got big round eyes. So who is your favorite alien?
I don't know. Let's see. Well, the classic gray aliens also freak me out. Close Encounters of the Third Kind is one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, because you didn't really see them too much. You just saw their ships and stuff.
And then you saw them come out of the ships, mostly silhouettes. Then you had those freaky, super tall, skinny ones that kind of had to duck out of the ship. And those, you kind of saw like a little bit of their faces, and that still freaks me out. Just because the gray... the, like, thanks to X-Files and, you know, just the grays being the thing.
Yeah.
You know, this vague humanoid figure with the owl-like eyes that abducts you, apparently. Those always just freaked me out, but I've always been fascinated with the, you know, with aliens. And
the one that freaked me out the most when I was younger was, I think the movie's called Resurrection. I'm not sure, but I do know Christopher Walken was in it, and it came out around
Communion.
Like, Communion. Thank you. I remember.
Cover of that book freaks me out.
That was my bad impression of kind of like gray aliens, because I remember seeing just a preview of it on Good Morning America with my mom, but it was like just this alien like slowly peeking behind the door jamb, and Christopher Walken's like, no, go away. Yeah. And so for five or 10 years after that, I could not go to sleep facing my door because I thought an alien was going to sneak out. So I would back to the door. It'll be fine. And I'd just like talk and calm myself down. Like, and now I'm like, please abduct me. Please get me out of this shit show.
Calgon, take me away.
Yeah, yeah. So my favorite probably is the one from Attack of the Clones. Mm. Is that it? No. Yes, that is it. Okay, the one where they go to the planet to find where all the clones are being made. Okay, that is Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, yeah,
episode 2.
Those are kind of grayish.
And they're really tall and kind of like lavender gray and like
personable.
Really slender, really like, soft.
We got a clone factory here. We don't need to abduct anybody.
Yeah.
We're
so sweet. We're so kind. We're making 10,000 troops to annihilate a nation. But
we're filling the
contract. We're here for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But these people put it in an order. We're just doing our job. So.
Exactly.
I don't know what you hear, Jedi. All right. But we'll show you around.
Dang.
But Paul. Remember that movie, that comedy? With
I
Seth
just
Rogen?
Oh, no. Saw.
He voiced it.
Seth Rogen voiced it. And it was the
Simon
Shaun
Cowell.
Of the Dead. Yeah. That pair. Great comedian.
That movie is right up my alley.
Okay. I need to see it because I actually saw the trailer for it.
Because that made it. Also, when he talked, he had teeth.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, Seth Rogen.
They kind of made him a little more human that way.
And it was great. And it was funny. You know, great rated R comedy. All right. So back to, I forget what the hell we were talking about. So
probably Irving.
Probably, I guess we're at the beginnings of Secret of Boris, you and Cameron.
Yeah.
from your previous bands.
Yeah, the actual beginning of Secret of Boris was the end of Lame. And we didn't know it was the end of Lame at the time. We kind of transformed it into Secret of Boris because we were doing conference calls with the management team. And they had...
Metal.
I know, super. Especially the trick that we learned on many of those conference calls, which is, you know, you want a radio hit, it's got to be 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And I'm like, okay, well, subconsciously that has affected all songwriting since then. They were like, you got a cease and desist from the lawyers of a band called Lame from Ottawa, Canada, who had a record contract with Universal Canada, who obtained international trademarks on the name. So change the name or we're in threat of a lawsuit. And, you know, being, where were we, like mid, late 20s, still a bit gullible, didn't do our research, we just caved. We're like, sure, fine, whatever, you know, makes us huge now. We'll change the name. And we still haven't quite confirmed if that was ever the case. And that's when we ended up changing the name with Secret of Boris to Secret of Boris that Cameron explained in the previous
The Beckoning
episode. But yeah, I mean, looking back, Lame definitely, it was six guys and three piece, basically Armani suits. It started out as thrift store suits and we worked our way up. But like going off, like Slipknot level, but looking really nice. I liked to nickname us Fancy Metal because like you walk up and you're like, oh, they're going to be, no, oh, that's like brutal.
Y'all do kind of to this day. That is something I kind of blanked on. Y'all still kind of wear like I remember suits and like button ups and ties.
Yeah, like a full blown three
still,
piece
to this day. Like
definitely went with Lame. And whenever we had the reunion, which was just four songs, but it was the most full I've ever seen Curtain, including like Fair to Midland's sold out Arrows and Anchors CD release back in 2011. We did the whole suits then, but no, it didn't last into Secret of Boris. We kind of, you know, I like to dress fancier, but the rest of the guys kind of went a little casual. And then it kind of started to have the West Borland effect to where, you know, I'm the strangest one. And then they're kind of like more a unit, but they definitely got more casual as time progressed. Secret of Boris really, we just prefer the Metallica, Nine Inch Nails, like, we're all black. Don't focus on us. Focus on the music. We're wearing all black, so your eyes go past us. Meshuggah does the same thing. Mm. Like, just straight up, just, you know, black, just pants and a t-shirt. It's almost like a uniform for a dark musician these days.
Like with comics, especially, there was a time, not so much now, maybe. I razzed my buddy because he does this. Back in the day, for male comics especially, it was usually like a red flannel button-up.
Yeah.
And jeans. That was your stage uniform, it almost seemed like. And yeah. I was like, I did that myself too. You know, maybe change it up with a different color. But for some reason, it always seemed to be red flannel button up. And now I'm just like, I always felt weird because I'm like, I don't wear that ever except when I'm on stage.
Right.
And so I'm like, I don't want to, like, what I wear on stage is literally what I'm wearing now.
That's awesome.
Because I want to, that's me on stage. It's
Do you ever pull material from, like, your shirt that you're wearing? Like, oh, so I saw this band one time, and this guy had a pull-up out his ass, and
rarely,
it's a bit. Rarely.
I've done that a couple of times. If just, you know, it just happens. I don't try to plan on that. There are some, like, wild fucking shirts that I have done that with. I have the shirt. It's now, like, in a drawer full of a bunch of, they're all a bunch of sleeveless shirts because the armpits just got calcified. And I was just like, well, I don't want to get rid of it.
Right.
But these armpits aren't helping anything. I don't want to wear it because I feel how hard the armpits are. So I just cut the sleeves off.
Yeah.
And it's this band out of Arkansas, the sludge metal band called Rewake. So it's Wake with an R in front of it.
Oh, that's and cool. Kind of like Rwanda.
Yeah. And then, and so this shirt is, says Rewake at the top, and they kind of have like a moth kind of logo that's in the middle of the middle of the word, and that it's literally the Grim Reaper shooting heroin into his arm.
Oh my God.
I didn't even notice the heroin part until like weeks later. I bought it because it was black and, you know, white design, you know, white graphic, black shirt, cool metal. Said Rewake, got the Grim Reaper, good enough for me, take my money, I want the shirt. I'll take a large, please.
Right.
And then later on, I'm looking at it, and I was just like, oh.
That's what that is.
That's cool. And so anytime I was on stage and I mentioned that, I was like, I think Dare should, you know, they should reach out to this band, the sludge band in Arkansas.
This is what happens.
If you want anyone shooting up heroin, it should be Death Incarnate.
Right.
And that was just like a reference to my shirt. And generally, sometimes there's nothing like funny enough on there,
right?
You know, or weird enough to point out. But I did, way back when, I did have an idea of wearing multiple band shirts on stage and doing a joke about each shirt and then doing that and then taking it off and doing another joke.
Yes.
That could still happen at some point, but as of right now, I just, that would be hard to pull off.
Yeah. I mean, like, how many shirts could you stack? Like, yeah. I mean, if you've got kind of an exponential size chart, you know, like
it'd be very uncomfortable.
XL down to
first.
L down to M. Yeah, maybe.
Well, I'd have to do it as like an offshoot. Like, it could be like a 10, 15 minute set where that's all it is. I couldn't do like a comedy set and just be this guy with like 10 t-shirts on. And then, because then it's like, well, I have to do the ones with the sleeves and then work my way to the sleeveless.
Exactly.
You know, just to give myself a little wiggle room. Like the shirt, like, okay, what's funny is you bring that up. The shirt I'm wearing now underneath my cave-in jacket.
Oh, this kind of looks like an ICP shirt.
Oh, thank you. It is definitely not. There's a band called A Life Once Lost.
Oh, I love Life
Originally
Once
out
Lost.
Of Philadelphia. I saw them with High on Fire many years ago.
Ah.
They kind of have, if like an American metalcore band. And then they have like, let's say about a 20 to 40% Meshuggah influence.
Okay.
Not that complicated, but just more accessible. But, and then mean sounding metalcore. They got that mean riffage and drums that I really like.
Nice.
And one of their, like their second or third album, Randy Blythe of Lamb of God did guest vocals. So they came up a little bit.
He's all over the place. I saw him with Pigface.
Huh.
At the Granada, like November 2019, I think. And everybody was on that stage. I think that was one of the only dates that Danny Carey didn't fly in and do drums for Tool as well. Like, it's just kind of a industrial circle jerk.
I know Randy Blythe literally was like a train hopping crust punk. And now he sings for this, you know, if any band's taken the mantle of like Pantera's sound, it's Lamb of God.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, minus, yeah, you know, Pantera's problematic, you know, politics and things recorded.
Yeah.
And things they've done since. But yeah, but that aside, so this is a Life Once Lost shirt. So it says at the bottom, it says riffs, and then there's a lightning bolt that says spliffs.
Riffs and spliffs.
So riffs and spliffs. And then the planet Earth also has a bowl as like in a bong.
Oh my God, the Earth is the bong.
The Earth is the bong. But where one would put your mouth to consume the marijuana smoke, there's just a hand doing the
devil horns.
Doing the devil horns.
If you type rock on an iMessage, that's how Apple knows that you want to type devil horns. I do it all the time.
And then psychedelic ICP like.
Yeah.
Definitely classic psychedelic smoke. So this is technically coming out, even though it's coming out of where you light, you know, even though the smoke generally comes out of the tube, but that's, you know, a hand.
That's post the hit. So they already took the hit of the Earth, and the logo's coming out from the
smoke from
steam.
The weed, the actual burnt, you know, flower.
Not the
itself,
smoke, the steam.
You know, fluttering around in the background with the groovy, you know, grooviness of,
that's,
you know,
one of the best audio descriptions.
Which really fit their later stuff, because they kind of got like weird and psychedelic-y, groovy in their last release. Still a fun band. I still like, you know, turn them on every once in a while.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard very many audio descriptions of t-shirts, but that's definitely the best one that I could imagine.
T-shirt is kind of a visual medium.
Yeah, for sure.
But some do give me, you know, sometimes like a comedic idea.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just easy as describing the shirt I'm wearing.
For
it's
sure.
Just like, how crazy is this? Like the Rawake one, though, that's definitely fucking hilarious if you have that kind of dark sense of humor.
You
said, I think those guys do.
You said they opened for High on Fire?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was at Rubber Gloves.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's where I found out Matt Pike is way shorter than me, because he walked by, and then I think I was with Regis, and he walked by, and we were like, wait, was that Matt Pike? Yeah, it probably was, because that's the only guy here with no shirt on. So, yeah. But I was like, dang, that dude's like 5'2". Wow. All right. Good thing he's on stage. He rocks.
Well, that's crazy. See, also shirts give people segues into rabbit holes. Like two I could think of related to Manifestive. My
great segue. I love that.
Thank you. My band with my better half, Lilith Taylor. Two L's in the middle. Manifestive, however, has side caps, kind of like the thrash bands, you know, Metallica,
oh, okay,
Pantera,
yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people mistake
See,
that for
I'm
like.
I'm glad you said that, because looking at it, I'm like, is it Manifesti 5? Like,
a
you
lot
just
of
don't
people
know.
Have thought that.
Well,
yeah.
And if it was, then you'd have the bars on top of the V, you
right,
know, below the V. But
thank
then,
you.
But at first, yeah, I was like, Manifest. Okay, that's probably what it is.
So we let go of taking any misinterpretation of the spelling or pronunciation of Manifestive on our second show in California, because we debuted at South by Southwest in Austin, which is funny because we formed in Vallejo, California. We came down here to play South by, went back out to California and played a pay to play at the Viper Room because we're like brand new band. Like, okay, how do you get on Sunset Strip the quickest? And it was like a Sunday night with Society One. I don't know if you remember Matt Zane. He was like not only a Jackie Treehorn level pornographer, like a good one. If you know, not that there's bad ones. Okay, that's a rabbit hole. We're just not gonna go down. But he also would do the hanging on the hooks and stuff and swing and all
okay,
that.
Yeah.
So we opened for them at Viper Room and another band called Skin Mask, which is kind of like Ghost in a way that they look a lot more innovative and edgy than what they sound. And I don't mean to talk crap on either of them, but Skin Mask looked like, oh my God, this is like going to be like if Nine Inch Nails and Slipknot got together. And they sounded just like Crew. That's cool. Ghost, oh my God, they also wear goggles just like me. I identify, they sound like Bon Jovi. So it's like, oh man, make the looks match the thing. But here I am not practicing when I preach with Manifestive, a band that looks like Mad Max is going to shank you for all you have. And really, we sound more like the more electronic side of Nine Inch Nails. We pull a lot of Radiohead influences, some like Typo Negative, like Long Sludge and stuff. So the marquee on the Viper Room said Manifest V. Skin Mask, and we're like, okay, that's it, you know, we're here, we are, this is the epicenter of music in the United States on Hollywood Sunset Strip Boulevard, and I can't, like, they're not going to spill it right here. They're not going to spill it right anywhere. I just better let it go now and keep it a joke. So the joke has gotten better in time because I have a note on my phone that collected all of the misspellings.
Oh, excellent. Perfect.
There's some really good ones in here. Manifesti 5 is one of the many. Okay. Manifestif was one of them with an F.
With an F. Right.
Yeah. So it's become a fun thing. But the shirt being the segue. Two things. First, you mentioned rubber gloves. Manifestif gets to headline rubber gloves on May 12th, and I know after that date passes, it will stand
of this year.
Correct.
Okay. So good current thing, because I try to make these come out, especially if there's something current. Some are just like I'm still figuring out the podcast release thing. But thank God you said that. That way this makes sense to, it's still like a small scale operation. But I guess I need to know to release it before then, which obviously it will. But
well, thank you. There's nothing like a soft deadline. I'm working on quite a few of them right now. Deadlines, that is.
So manifested, I'm thinking of this live video that I, just checking y'all out. So it was Lilith on xylophone and you on guitar. There's probably more to it. But that's what I think. I've also saw that here at one of the parties one time.
Uh-huh.
And I was just kind of like, huh. And maybe I didn't even know that was you playing, probably because you're literally masked up. Like you're going to go check out Chernobyl or something like that. So I probably didn't know that was you.
Thank you for realizing that's why we wear the masks, is for environmental protection and our future without an atmosphere or oceans.
So is it always, I'm pretty sure there's plenty of instrumentation, in the recording process, but.
It's basically in the recording process. So the last two Manifestif records, Ryan A., the drummer, and Kevin Porter, the bassist of Secret of Boris, also are in Manifestif with us. But like in the same way that present day Robin Fink and Elon Rubin or Nine Inch Nails, or back in the day, like Chris Frenna or like Josh Fries, they're live members who do collaborate a lot in the studio.
Of the Vandals.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Of the Vandals, thank you. Or of Devo.
And I found out Devo. I was like, wow, I think I found a perfect circle. And I was just like, going through the members there, I'm like, do I know any of these people? Probably on the internet. I was like, Josh Fries. And then maybe it was Wikipedia or pre-Wikipedia. I was just perfect circle. Devo, the Vandals, what?
His actual bands that he was in way before any of those.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
Maynard got him from Devo, because Maynard was a huge Devo fan.
Doesn't shock me at all.
I read Maynard's autobiography. I highly recommend it. It's called The Intersection or something of Contrary Things. Yeah. Oh, A Perfect Union. Because I remember it was like, hey, that's like a perfect circle. I see your pun there. A Perfect Union of Contrary Things. And he talks about finding Josh Fries because he's a huge Devo fan. He's like, that's the drummer that I want that's not already the best drummer. One of the best drummers in the world, Danny Carey, who he had in Tool, still does. Josh Fries is everywhere. Met him actually last July, going down to see Billy Howerdell from A Perfect Circle's solo tour. And Danny Lonner was on the road with him, who was a Nine Inch Nails member, and then went off to make the Underworld soundtrack. One of the greatest soundtracks ever, because he brought everybody in. He brought David Bowie and Maynard on a track together. He did a new Skinny Puppy track for that. He pulled the Icarus Line on there too. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah.
They're definitely kind of I think they were on Epitaph. I could be wrong. But yeah, went down to go see Billy Howerdell and Josh Fries flew in just to play this Austin date. There was two dates on the tour, one in Arizona and one in Austin that he could make. I'm like, okay, Josh Fries and Danny Lonner and Billy Howerdell on the same stage. I have to go. And met them. And it's crazy. Expectations on when you meet somebody that you look up to, getting flipped, it's crazy. I thought that Josh would be super friendly and bubbly. And he was very friendly, but he was brief. He was in a zone, and I could probably tell it's because he has about 150 bands worth of material in his head, and there's a lot of noise there. Right. And Danny Lonner, I thought he would be standoffish because he was the guy that was in Nails some time ago and now really isn't, and not in the limelight so much.
Probably all broody like Trent.
That's what I thought. No, he was a complete goofball, and we hit it off. When I saw him signing another fan's like poster on the ground, and I was wearing a Nine Inch Nails tour shirt on purpose to try to like, you know, have something to relate with.
Oh, these are signals that we
absolutely put out. Yeah, no,
especially at a show.
It was a non-subtle signal because it was from the 2000 tour that I mentioned earlier, that exact stop, and it said "Where the fuck were you?" on the top, and I lent him my back to be able to sign the poster. I'm like, no, not on the floor. I've worshipped you forever, and I'm not saying that right now, only except by my body language.
Please
of letting
don't
you
get on your knees for me, sir.
Yeah, just sign this thing on my back instead. And he was about to, and he pulled the poster on my back. He's like, oh, no, I remember that tour. Oh, God, that was horrible. And it just, like, traumatized him, and he went away.
What? Oh. Okay.
And that was, but then we ended up still getting a picture of stuff later, and I kind of know or can suspect why he probably had bad memories of that tour, because from what I read and, you know, what you read, as we mentioned earlier with Pantera and politics and the press, isn't always true.
Yeah.
I had read that was at the end of Trent's non-sober days, and he constantly had the flu. So that whole tour, he was both sick with the flu and hanging over. So he was just a mix of those for like months straight. And also running the show. So you can imagine how bad his mood was. So that's probably, it could be where that came from.
That sounds like work.
Right.
Oh, that tour reminds me how the being, you know, fulfilling my dreams actually felt like a fucking job.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
I can only imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Josh Fries is how we got there. And how we get to Josh Fries. Oh, the Devo, the Maynard. Rubber Gloves, Manifestive. There we are.
Sunset Strip. South By.
Name misspelling. South By, all that. The other thing from your shirt that we related, you said High on Fire is who you saw. Rewake.
With this band, yeah.
Open.
No, that was, Rewake was actually at the Rec Room. Did you ever go there?
Yeah.
I love when I can play. Man. When you can say that and people know what you're talking about.
I completely forgot about the Rec Room until you said that. Yeah, Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum came.
They played there all the goddamn. I never saw them, but with just the me being
so
on top
great.
Of flyers and shows and getting into music during the early aughts and, you know, branching out, seeing shows. I never saw them.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing their flyers because it seemed like they played Rec Room like 5-6 times a year.
They subconsciously.
Were they local at all? Or they just,
no, they're from San Francisco.
See, there you go.
So they subconsciously were kind of a blueprint for Manifestive because they were like as wacky and weird and like Frank Zappa, Danny Elfman level weird. By the way, speaking of Epitaph, I don't know if you've gotten or listened to Danny Elfman's solo record that's on Epitaph Records.
Oh, no.
It's called Big Mess. It is just
the most Danny Elfman I've heard is whatever movie he makes music for.
Dude. No, this is like if you gave Oingo Boingo Bad Acid and Good PCP. He's like, he just lays it all out because it was his pandemic record. He was stuck in one of his houses, only had a headphone with one working speaker, and like demoed 19 songs of just pure like manic fury. And then Josh Fries went in and played on that record as well. And I think that's Josh's best record out of the 150 plus he's been on. It's great, speaking of Epitaph. But so High on Fire, they just played a venue that Manifestive is playing on tour at the end of June of this year, June 29th. We're playing the same venue High on Fire just played like a week ago. It's called Erebus in Kelso, Washington.
Okay.
It's like a 4,000 population town in Washington. We're like, why is this a destination? And it's mostly like just underground, like metal or like crazy industrial, like what we are. And they have like weekly events, like pack the place. And High on Fire had like, you know, 200-300 people there. I'm like, wow, percentage wise of your town population, this is huge. But they're like 30-40 miles north of Portland, so that's probably where a lot of people drove that are like sick of Portland the way a lot of Dallasites are sick of Dallas, you know, just like screw parking when you could just go to a place where it's easy and you're not getting like checking your car.
So you get out of town for a minute, so it's like I'm not going the same places. Yeah, I'm seeing something I like, but it's like that's the same place.
Yeah. And just in the cities have not become easier to deal with, especially.
It's kind of like me going to Denton. I'm like, oh, cool. The show's in Denton. You know, it's at Rubber Gloves or something. I'm like, cool. I'm like, I don't go there all that often.
Yeah.
But I don't have to go to the same venues I always go to.
And you don't have to bring like an extra 50 just to park.
Oh, yeah. I just get there early so I can have a decent parking spot.
Exactly.
It's fine by me. I'm an early bird.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to shows, waking up, it's a different story.
Yeah, I try to be both and succeed rarely. But you know.
Hey, you were on fucking time. Like you're like, I'll be there like 5 after 6, and like, damn it, if you didn't walk, if you, we weren't literally feet from each other, I looked, I was like 6:05. Holy shit, paragraph is. You are a music. You have that inner, what's the TikTok-y thing? Not palindrome, not monotone.
Metronome.
Metronome. There you go. That's how not a musician I am.
This is how obsessed with my loathing of social media I am. When you said TikToking, I'm like, no, don't mention that. Don't give your information to the Chinese government. Quit it.
The old school.
Yeah, with the T's, with the C's in it, not just the K's. Yeah, yeah. No, thank you, but I will give you my secret, Google Maps, because I live 80 miles away.
Shit.
And
well, that's why I like this, because you're going to come here anyways.
Right. Yeah. Oh no, this is so convenient, because it's like the one time I come into the city.
That's how I can kind of guarantee these things. I'm like, well, especially thanks to Cameron kind of showing me like, all right, SOB's here these days. You and Lilith will be here these days. I was just like, oh, okay, cool. I love scheduling shit out. It's something I'm just like, ooh, especially if it's something I want to do and I can schedule it out.
And it's really conveniently like segued into something else, like on the way to our practice, for instance, or like if you're meeting somebody on the way to like another show or something, to where you're not having to make a special thing for it. Yeah, that's
last time here I did this, and I went and talked, interviewed a buddy who's in a couple of bands. He's in let's say like Black and Crust, thrashy hardcore bands,
nice.
Wildspeaker and Vorukt. His name is Matt Randolph. And what's funny is just with me, maybe it's just me being a comedian and how most comedians know each other. There's some comics I rarely see or I haven't met yet, and we've all been around. A part of me is just like, I forget, there's the bands that I personally know, the people in the bands, and a part of me is just like, in my head, I'm like, oh, y'all don't know each other. And I was like, well, of course, there's a fuck ton of musicians.
Yeah.
And DFW, there's a fuck ton of people here. All obviously percentage wise musicians, it'll probably just like, oh, you don't know each other. Ah, oh, shucks.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's just something.
Well, you should maybe use that to like be a connector.
Oh no. I love.
You probably already do.
When I know somebody that needs to know somebody else, cause I'm like, they've both told me they had this thing in common, that I love doing that.
Nice.
But I kind of have to wait for us to be like maybe at the same show or just somewhere. Right. And I was just like, ooh, come meet this person.
Somewhere where it's convenient.
And, not just because I want you to meet them. I need y'all to meet because y'all have some shit in common that I only know.
Yeah.
I know y'all have these things in common, but you don't know each other. So I have to connect this triangle.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's just like a universe thing. I'm like, it'd just be better if y'all know each other.
Yeah.
Okay, talk. See, y'all do have things in common.
Yeah.
And I made that happen.
That's awesome.
That's all, and I just need to know that. And I'm just like, because I feel like it's like a misconnection in the universe.
Yeah,
these
well,
two dots.
The universe appreciates your help with that. Seriously.
So one thing I remember years ago, I think it was our pal Regis telling me, like when it comes to Secret of Boris, I think he said, again, could be wrong, but it's like you kind of introduced like the heavier, weirder stuff into the band. Am I too far off on that? Or
Weirder, yes. Okay.
I know all you guys kind of like metal. I like the heavy shit with like I like the Isis and High on Fire, Converge. My real shit's like Converge, Poison the Well, Every Time I Die.
I love Converge.
Weird hardcore, weird metal, and sometimes space.
Refused.
Shit. Oh yeah,
love.
I listened in the shower the other day,
dude. Same. Their last album that came out when they came back together. I was.
I don't know if I checked that out yet. I played Shape of Punk.
That was like 2015 or whatever when that came out, and Manifestive. We were on our second tour at the time. We're embarking on our 11th tour this summer.
Wow,
if that says anything. We were staying at a friend's house, actually the sound guy from a show the previous night, at Midtown Art Supply in Omaha, Nebraska. And
home at 311.
Yep. Cameron was sharing that with me earlier. We were talking about, like, we've been trading CDs for about a year at a time. We're like the extended library program between friends. And, the pandemic, I dove into Bowie's discography and harder than I'd already been in previously. And so I lent him Black Star for a year, and he loaned me Earthling.
The hip-hop?
For a year. No, the Bowie album.
Oh, yeah.
That he'd recorded and really couldn't finish the way he wanted to because cancer caught up with him.
Yeah.
It really sucks. But, I mean, at the same time, now that you see what's happened since when he died, it's like, oh, maybe he knew and he was just getting out. But, yeah, he was like, the next album we're going to trade. I'll trade you 311's Transistor. I'm like, yeah, maybe. Ooh. I'll trade you.
That was literally the second album I ever bought. Or Whoa. CD. Let's say CD.
Nice.
That was, I bought like some cassettes when I was at. But my best friend's a huge 311 fan.
Do you remember your first CD?
Oasis's Be Here Now.
Nice.
Not What's the Story of War and Glory, the one that everybody fucking had.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, well, that was the release afterwards. Huh. And so, you know, of course, you know, I had Wonderwall's on the radio still and Champagne Supernova. Huh. And so I bought it thinking those were on there.
Yep.
Maybe not. Maybe I did. But I remember, that was the first CD I ever owned. So I really loved it. I haven't listened to it since, that first, once I started branching off into, my buddies in the 311, we both, some other friends got into Limp Bizkit and Korn, new metal and Linkin Park and stuff like that. But yeah, that was, and his mom would have to buy him the edited 311 albums.
But
they were nowhere near offensive or anything. Right. They just said fuck in a couple of songs.
Yeah.
And now
they're heathens.
Right. And they're such a fun, positive band.
Yeah.
And just like, just having fun with that. Like, how can a band that has, punk, ska, reggae, alt rock, and rap elements?
Yeah. No, there's something to be said for fun music. And
if anything, Oasis is more offensive just because of like. A mom would listen to Oasis and be like, oh, okay. And it would like remind them of maybe like modern day alternative music and a little bit of the Beatles just because they're British.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Even though Noel and Liam Gallagher have said horrific things about each other, let alone maybe in general, those guys are just, I don't know who's really the asshole, maybe both.
Yeah.
But they're more of a problem than 311.
Absolutely.
Who has probably caused no problems.
Right.
Because if anything, it is nothing they did. There was that bullshit that's like, three times 11 in the 11th album in the alphabet. It's K, so they're secretly a clan, a KKK band.
Like Knights in Satan's Service for Kiss.
Yeah.
I never heard that about 311.
They got the Knights in Satan's Service
treatment.
Service. Oh, yeah, there you go. Treatment.
No, but we could serve the service twice.
That's the only thing people tried to say. I'm just like, all right, we'll point any of this shit out in the lyrics. And they couldn't. It's like, well, they're rapping about aliens. It's like, yeah. No shit.
Satanic aliens.
And maybe the
my
back
aliens
of
Orthodox.
The Blue album didn't help, where they all just have like the eye. They're trying to look like the gray aliens.
Right.
All back around.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, and also they had like an alien logo. It was just like the gray alien at the time. And, but yeah,
that's what I loved
I'll
about
never
them.
Forget that. It's just like, it secretly means KKK. I'm just like, or you could listen to the band, to the obvious thing that in Omaha, Nebraska, 311 was code for, it was like police code for domestic, not something like bad, like sexual
assault. It's like a house party or something, wasn't it?
Something, yeah. It was just like, yeah, that's a code.
These guys are having too much fun. Tone it down.
To send the cops to, clamp down on a cool time for some kids.
That does seem like 311's whole vibe.
Yeah.
This is too much fun. Tone it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first two albums, okay, so like Pretty Hate Machine, my mom bought me at that Blockbuster Music. That was pretty cool, but
mom.
only because I like wanted down in it because I was into rap like at the time and I didn't realize that was the only song on there like it, and I'm like, oh cool. But later on, my first two CDs that I bought first were Rhythm of the Pride Lands, which is not the Lion King soundtrack.
Okay.
It's the same African choir that did all the Lion King music, just more music like it, but still Disney had it.
Wow.
Because, like, yeah, I was kind of obsessed with Disney at that age, as I guess all 10 or 12-year-olds are. And then the next one was From the Muddy Banks of the Wishka by Nirvana, their live album. And I'd really gotten into Nirvana, like, over the radio, but that kind of got me into live music, I guess you could say, because Chris Novoselic, the bassist, wrote a long like story in there, because I think it was the first release that wasn't unplugged in New York since Kurt's death, so he's able to talk about Nirvana more objectively. And the first sentence I'll never forget was, Nirvana started out as a live band. Don't all bands? And here I am, at the time, 14-year-old, I just made albums by using the microphone jack on my crap stereo with the two tape decks and, like, record one with the drum beat, flip the tapes, record over my drum beat with the keyboard part, flip the tapes again, and just... That was my, like, poor man's multi-tracking, because I didn't have a mixer at 14. I was, you know, barely able to come out of the room without getting chastised for looking like Manson instead of Joel Osteen, who is non-existent then. Or maybe he was into Satanism then. Who knows? But, so it kind of blew my mind. It's like, wait, all live bands don't start as live bands, so how do I make what I'm doing live? And that's kind of where that comes into the weirdness that you're talking about with Secret of Boris. I've really pushed the electronics, like in the beginning, and then Ryan A. and Cameron really took them running. The few years I left, when was I? I was out of the band from the very beginning of 2013 to pretty much the very beginning of 2018. Okay, so a good 5 years. It felt longer than that, but that's because I moved out to California and formed Manifestive with Lilith, and then we married. Not many marriages start with the band. We formed the band, then 6 months later we got married. And then moved back here. And I ended up back in the fold with Secret of Boris, and my true Gemini self has two bands as a result. So there you go. It's kind of a full circle there.
Hey, no, that's a great way to wrap it all up. We end up talking about aliens and also you.
As if I'm not an alien. Thank you. Thank you for suggesting that.
I wasn't trying to imply it.
I still feel I am an alien, but that
caught on.
That helped me feel a little less alien-y. No, I enjoy the alien feeling. I'm kind of a contrarian. You know, if I feel like I blend in, I get out.
Yeah. So y'all have a new record in the works, right? No, not like a release date or anything yet. But it's in. I mean, you've obviously dropped, you know, two music videos.
Yes, Secret of Boris.
So you're teasing people. You obviously have like an album somewhere.
That we're just one song at a timing, and that's the cool thing with being in two bands is like you could experiment with tactics and marketing, because Manifestive is. Did an album deal with a label out of LA and St. Paul called Give Take. And we did just a full regular record called Legacy that came out at the beginning of February, but it was recorded around the same time. And with, as I said before, half the same people, Ryan A. and Kevin were instrumental, pun intended, on that. While we were also recording the Boris recordings, but we were like, you know, with Manifestive, hey, let's do just an album because we signed an album agreement. And then Boris, being a free agent, not to be confused with actual Boris, who are awesome, Secret of Boris, you let your friends and heroes influence you, and we saw both Lockjaw and Element 80 coming back together in Element 80's case, or Lockjaw having been working on it for a long time, release a song at a time, and then their numbers really kind of get to grow, going back to that like tiny attention span. So that's kind of why we've taken this route with Secret of Boris.
And you know what? I kind of just clicked after I asked that, and then you're talking, is that how, especially with today, with how, you know, with your streaming and YouTube, how it's kind of like a lot of bands are, you know, sometimes eschewing the album thing, mm-hmm. because you can, that's what, you know, bands, you know, do, but you kind of don't need to do that. You can record a song, probably fucking love it, let's do a music video, and that doesn't always mean you have an album, like literally,
right?
You can, totally can, plenty of, you know, that's what bands still do, but I was, you know, thinking like, yeah, the last few years, you can put out like a few songs, you know, an EP. And you're still a very active band. It's not like, because it, you know, traditionally is like, all right, album, tour, album, tour, album, tour, and that's the formula.
Right.
But it's like, hey, you could still tour and put out new music. It's just a lot cheaper to put it out there, put the music out there. Mm-hmm. You really don't need a physical, because the time and the money behind the physical release. You can record it and upload it.
And like, who's doing that? Most people have like an aux cable or a Bluetooth connection or even just, you know, what have you in their cars. Like, CDs are kind of antiquated. I have kind of an older car that only has CDs or radios. So I'm buying them $5 a pop at Movie Trading Company, like this classic. I'm like, oh my God, wow. But yeah, it's like what we were talking about with the alien skin. It's a gray area. you don't have to do singles or EP, because Boris recorded this with the intent, like, we recorded all the songs at once. We're like, okay, let's do this as a full record. But we're like, wait, we can do both, because we've seen other bands do it. Like, so highly suggest to any artist in the field of comedy, in the field of music, just follow your idols and see what they're doing. And that kind of, at least for me personally, gives me permission to do things like release a bunch of singles on a row and then release it as a full album. Because with the advent of streaming, you could take down all those singles afterwards.
Oh, okay.
And it keeps all your play counts from the previous singles, but then you have them on an album that already has play counts out the gate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so much of the music industry and people that listen to it are like, oh, it's got zero streams. And I don't know if I want to be the first person to listen to it. I only want to, you know, want to listen to stuff that, like, it looks like a lot of people like it. A lot of people are like that. So, yeah, that's kind of the plan with Secret of Boris, is just doing this a single at a time until we feel the time is right to go ahead and boom, here's the whole record.
Yeah.
Put it all at once. And then all these singles, the videos will exist, but streaming wise, it'll just be as if there's one album the whole time.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's another secret of Boris. So many of them. So
story
many
that first
of them.
Time, I was like, so Secret of Boris, what's that mean? It's a secret. I was just like, I want to leave right now. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. You know what? I volleyed it back the other way. I think y'all did a Halloween show, like maybe like a tribute show or y'all playing on Halloween. And I commented, I know some people had to see, I was like, you should get on this show, you should go by Secret of Boris.
Boris, because it's a ghost.
Yeah, I get it. All right.
No, there's some, whenever we changed the name from Lame to Secret of Boris, there were some Lame fans that weren't happy. We had a friend and fan call us Secret of Bore Us. And I was like, okay. But, you know, it was kind of crazy doing that transition, because Lame was just an onslaught, and Secret of Boris is more emotive, more like from the heart, less thought, more feeling, and Lame was just chaotic. So I could see how, you know.
Oh, that's what, you know, especially like an evolution of, you know, one band to the next, or even bands in general. Mm. Like, and that I growing up, because sometimes your band's like, oh, that didn't, like with AFI.
Yeah.
Like when they, you know, released Sing the Sorrow, part of me is just like, huh? This isn't Art of Drowning 2. But also, I was a shitty teenager at the time.
Right.
I didn't realize, oh, these are adults. They're creating music. This is their endeavor. It's maturing along with they are.
Right.
And it's like one of my favorite bands, Mastodon.
Yeah.
They're sludgy beginnings, and they're more proggy, riffy. You know, they transitioned into those as I grew up. So everything that they put out, I'm like, keep it coming. This is fucking amazing, because I'm growing, you know, maturing as a consumer of the music. Yeah. But I can, you know, I'm not a shitty, ignorant teenager at this point in time where I'm just like, you're not, make the same album over and over.
Right.
And I'm just like, no, that's not, you know, they're not Hate Breed, man.
You right. Know? Nine Inch Nails does that for me, too. Like, if you compare Pretty Hate Machine with, like, Bad Witch, their most recent release, with vocals. I mean, they did a Pandemic Ghosts volumes 3 and 4 reaction, which
I
was cool.
Yeah,
it was like really, it captured that feeling of like, oh my God, we're trapped. We don't know how long. Let's just bring this back to the last time there was a pandemic, to 1920s, and it had kind of like that noir type feeling. But a lot of old, like Head Like a Hole, I Wanna Fuck You Like an Animal, Nine Inch Nails fans were not having Bad Witch. That's like Trent being a father of four now, living in Malibu with a gorgeous, gorgeous wife. It's, you know, it just wasn't relatable to a lot of people, like with that growth. So that is really precious if you can grow with a band.
But obviously they're doing fine. You know,
you
may lose Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That don't like how you're sounding now, but you gain, you know, all these new fans that like exactly. the early stuff, but also like the new stuff.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe some people just like the new stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're not all Metallica fans that, you know, probably just like, no, man, everything from Death Magnetic to, you know, no, man, I'm a Saint Anger guy all the way. You know,
I got
I heard them first at Saint Anger and it fucking hooked me, man. I want to meet that person. I want to interview them and let them build their case for an hour before I just say, you're wrong and hit stop.
I've heard 72 Seasons is pretty good, though, but I haven't listened to it.
I've heard like a couple of the singles off this new one. I'm like, I just don't care about Metallica anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I posted this online. For me personally, Mastodon is I think Mastodon will go into history, and I'm talking like 50, 60 years from now.
Yeah.
With their releases and progression and evolution, and also keeping these core guys together that seem to all get along just right.
Right.
And not having like a Lars in the band, and you know, just being like, ugh. But I think Mastodon will go down. Given time, 100 years from now, I hope, I want this to happen. I want Mastodon to be remembered better than Metallica. I respect Metallica and everything they did. Yeah. You know, they blazed a trail. You can't deny any of that shit. But just musically, I'm like, they're just.
It's like the trailblazing stop of the Black Record.
Yeah. Load and Reload have some good riffs on them. I will admit that. And,
2x4 is one of my favorites.
That lyric alone really can get you into the Hetfield.
The games. MTV Icon episode for Metallica, Avril Lavigne did Fuel. It was incredible.
Oh, was it?
Because she's like, give me Fuel, give me Fire, give me Down as I Desire. And you expect like pop punk, but then like the band's heavier than Metallica at it. And this kid's like wearing swim trunks and he's got like size 14 feet, double bass, barefoot. He didn't give a crap.
Blowing Lars out of the water.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wow. This is like, yeah, anyway.
All right. We can wrap this up. I know y'all got practice here. And maybe.
Eventually.
Right before that. But Paragraph Man, this has been a blast.
Yeah,
this
Brian. I thought it was gonna be. The Breckenridge.
The other band that might be a little pulling teeth wise. Because I sent out a group text. You're the only one that responded. No one else. Like, maybe they saw the first message. I'm just like, all right. The Ryans and who's the guy I'm blanking? He's the one. I talked to him last time.
Also, Ryan.
No. I know both Ryans.
Kevin Porter.
Kevin. Yep. I talked to him last time. He's just the one I don't know that well.
He is technically the newest member, but, you know, he is why I even picked up a guitar in the first place.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, or started pursuing it, really, because I picked it up and I'm like, no, this isn't for me. This is like, all I had in mind were like the Joe Satrianis and Steve Vai's, like a really kind of overindulgent, like just, ooh, look at me, I'm solo, I've got tiger stripes on my guitar, awesome. And so that turned me off. But Kevin was like, no, listen to the rhythm guitar of Metallica. No, listen to like what Nine Inch Nails is doing with guitar. I'm like, you know what, that slaps. So, and that was about a quarter century ago.
All right, well, I'll have to get him on here. And we can
it would be fun to hear what he has to say.
All right. Well, I appreciate this so much.
Same.
It was a lot of fun.
Same. Absolutely. Right, let's do it again sometime.
Here at Pro Rehearsal Studios.
Professional rehearsal.
Oh, whatever. It's pro. No one's ever said professional. No one's ever said. No
That's
one's
the
ever
joke.
Said, hey, where you at? I'm at Professional Rehearsal
That's
Studios.
That's the joke.
And they'd be like, who stole my friend's phone? But thanks for Pro Rehearsal for having us back. Even though nobody really knew we're here besides me and Paragraph. Because it's a rehearsal space. Y'all have access.
But they will know.
It's a 24/7 place. Anyways, this is the Bracketing Podcast. Come see me do stand-up live. Check my social media for that. Just do it. Also, check out Secret of Boris. Look him up on Spotify. Hit Shuffle. All that shit's fucking awesome. I've been listening to y'all more than I ever have. Just especially before and after I talked to Cameron, I've never dived so deep. I never had y'all on rotation like that before, and I was like, okay, I get it now. I completely get it.
Both Secret of Boris and Manifestive, the one thing that they do have in common, besides three members, are that they reward the repeat listener.
There you go.
They're really good for, like, you know, they're not just listen once and that's it. There's new stuff to find every time. So.
See Secret of Boris live. See Manifestive live. Buy some merch if they got it.
Oh, yeah.
These guys are great. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, man.